Hello everyone.
Hello, hello.
I'm Tony.
And I'm Telly.
And we are
the Lazy Book Lovers.
This is a podcast for book lovers who procrastinate about reading and have never-ending to-be-read piles. Today's episode is Black History Month. This is the UK Black History Month, if anyone's feeling confused. There's different months all over the world for these, and the UK one is this month. Mm-hmm. So Tally has made a nice little list for us.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do today. Just a quick shout out to the ways in which you can kind of read along with us and follow on with us. We do have a Facebook group. We would love to build sort of a community there. It's private. Sorry, our bad. You can't unprivate them. And also we do have a Ko-fi subscription link. So if you do happen to really enjoy the podcast and want to support us, it's £2 a month. It's kind of like Patreon. Get you a link to an exclusive Discord where we're trying to build a bit of a book community there. Right. Take it away with the list.
Okay. So what I've done is I have put together a list of Black British authors. Apologies. I know this is a UK Black History Month and I've just picked British authors. I apologise. In the future, I will do like a separate Scottish or whatever list, Welsh list. Or
oh God, those lists will be hard to find.
Which is why I just went for British at the moment. Yeah. So if you do have any recommendations, please send them my way. Mm-hmm. I would really appreciate that. Oh, I've just remembered someone I missed off my list. Let me just add them on and we will start with that author. Okay.
Oh, improv, where that's happening.
Yeah.
Did you notice that I rearranged the plant pots?
I did not know. I got rid of that. I didn't beat any up.
Yeah, well, I got rid of the big thing because I've had several incidents lately where pots have got knocked over and I was like, this is clearly just not working.
Something has to change.
So for those of you who can't see my room, I have like a trillion plants in here, but I actually am in a very small room and I had this big plant pot stand that was also very cheap from Amazon and gotten quite rickety. And it's kind of blocks the walkway of my very small room.
That looks much better. It looks really
good. Do you know what I mean? And I can, because
they look happier as well.
Yeah, and because they're individual, I can kind of take and move things away. Yeah. So I feel like it's a bit more practical. And I'm hoping we'll have less accidents because just so many got knocked over.
Yeah.
And every time I clean, one gets knocked over. I was like, right, this is just not working anymore. So I've got my dad to re-flat pack the big pot stand and it's for a future home that is bigger.
Yeah, it's much better.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so I have 9 books that I'm going to talk to you about. Some of them I've read, some of them I haven't. It's just going to be a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
So technically these are authors, but I picked one book from each author to talk about.
Right.
So firstly is Dorothy Coombson, who is a mystery kind of thriller writer. She has quite a back catalogue. I have met her. She's wonderful. I went to a talk and she has signed a couple of my books. This is my best friend's favourite author, so we both went to meet her. So I would say to pick up Ice Cream Girls, which is the first book I read of hers. Uh-huh. There's actually a sequel out now, but it works perfectly fine as a standalone. I haven't read the sequel. As teenagers, Poppy Carlisle and Serena Gurringe, were the only witnesses to a tragic event. Amid heated public debate, the two seemingly glamorous teens were dubbed the Ice Cream Girls by the press and were dealt with by the courts. Years later, having read very different lives, Poppy is keen to set the record straight about what really happened, while married mother of two Serena wants no one in her present to find out about her past. But some secrets will not stay buried, and if theirs is revealed, everything will become a living hell all over again. So this follows two teenage girls, Poppy and Serena. So one is white and one is black. Serena's the young black girl and Poppy's the young white girl. They are both groomed by an older gentleman and he ends up dead. I don't think that's a spoiler. I think you find out very early on. And Poppy she serves jail time for it. However, she has always maintained that she did not kill him.
Sorry, remind me, is Poppy the black girl?
The white girl.
Oh, okay, right.
So Poppy has always maintained that she did not kill him. And yeah, it's really interesting. And it dives into, like, so Poppy's from a kind of lower class family life, you know, single mother kind of vibe. Serena has both her parents, she has a very stable family upbringing.
So you go into the kind of classism kind of stuff.
Yeah, so all this gets brought in. It's very much trial by media and stuff. And Serena's put it entirely behind her. She's now married, she's got kids, she doesn't talk about it. I don't even think her husband's aware of it. And Poppy gets out of prison, she served her time, and then it all comes bubbling up. So the whole story is between the lead up to his death,
right,
and it flicks between that and nowadays. So you yourself do not know what happened until, like, the very end.
Oh, I love books like that.
Really, really,
they frustrate me though.
Yeah,
but I like them.
I was not far off on the correct answer.
Okay,
bearing in mind there can only be a couple of answers.
Yeah, it was a 50-50, but okay.
But yeah, it was very, very compelling, like unputdownable. This is one of those books that actually is unputdownable.
Okay.
Yeah, and Dorothy Kimson has a massive back catalogue, as I said, and some of her most recent books have gone more into, like, the horror side of the thriller genre, I would say. But yeah, fantastic.
We probably should clarify for non-UK people, because I'm aware from our analytics we do have a lot of non-UK. We do use words like black and white in the UK. They are not derogatory here.
Oh, yeah.
I have come across this. Even when I've travelled, I have met Americans who be like, you can't say that, he's a black man. That is terminology that's not generally seen as offensive in the UK. We don't say, like, African English. That's not how the terminology is. No. We might say Black British.
Black British.
That's generally the terminology. So just in case, I'm just aware Americans have very different terminology and a different history than us.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clarify that for you. We are not being derogatory when we speak that way. It is just the language that is used in the UK.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unless you're using it
in an
obviously derogatory way. It's not
as a word in itself, it's not seen as offensive. You will find people of that community referring to themselves as Black British.
So next on my list is Zadie Smith, and I've picked White Teeth as one that I want to read.
I'm meaning to read, like, Zadie Smith books forever, because I've just heard such good things about them, but I've just not got
right. Yeah, like, they are always popping up and I'm like, I really need to read one of these books. So I picked White Teeth because that was the first one that ever kind of came into my, like, world of books, I guess. And this is also Zadie's debut. So it says here, Zadie Smith's dazzling debut caught critics grasping for comparisons and deciding on everyone from Charles Dickens to Salman Rushdie to John Irving to Martin Amis. But the truth is that Zadie Smith's voice is remarkably, fluently, and altogether wonderfully her own. So this is a contemporary, it's listed as contemporary, but I guess it is, yeah. So at the centre of this invigorating novel are two unlikely friends, Archie Jones and Samed Iqbal, hapless veterans of World War II. Archie and Samed and their families become agents of England's irrecoverable. Can you do the word for me?
Show me the word, please.
Thank you.
Irrecoverable. Oh, I can't say it. You've wigged me out now as well.
But agents of England's transformation, a second marriage to Clara, a beautiful albeit tooth-challenged Jamaican half his age, quite literally gives Archie a second lease on life and produces eerie and knowing a child whose personality doesn't quite match her name. It is Ara. Jamaican for no problem. Yeah, I guess that's how it's used. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just, like, zoning out there. I'm like, wait, I've heard this word used. Is that, yeah. Samed's late in life arranged marriage, he had to wait for his bride to be born, produces twin sons whose separate paths confound Iqbal's every effort to direct them, and a renewed, if selective, sub to his Islamic faith. Set against London's racial and cultural tapestry, venturing across the former empire and into the past as it barrels towards the future, White Teeth revels in the ecstatic hodgepodge of modern life, flirting with disaster, confounding expectations, and embracing the comedy of daily existence. I really struggled with a lot of that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The reviews I've heard did not sound so confusing. So I don't I think it's just bad text.
Sometimes the way these blurbs are written are just like not for a human to read aloud.
No, it's crazy. A lot of these blurbs are taken from the author's website and are just, it's like they've been written by AI. Okay. Next on my list is one that I have read and have spoken about on the podcast, possibly and maybe even discussed it on a previous Black History Month episode. So this is David Ulusoga, and this is Black and British. So he has Black and British, A Essential History, which I have not read. I do intend to. I have read Black and British, A Short Essential History, which is like the shorter version that's more... I think it's more geared towards like a younger audience.
Okay.
So this would, it's a middle grade slash YA one. I do intend on reading the like adult essential history as well, which is like 600 odd pages. Whereas this one is like 200 pages. Yeah. This was really, really good. And I actually want to reread it because I did read it as an audio and I think I will reread it because I found it so interesting, but I find it really hard to hold facts in my head.
Yeah.
Unless I hear it a few times. So I do need to give this a reread. So this is A Short Essential Introduction to Black British History. When did Africans first come to Britain? Who were the well-dressed black children in Georgian paintings? Why did the American Civil War disrupt the Industrial Revolution? These and many other questions are answered in this essential introduction to 1800 years of the Black British history, from the Roman Africans who guarded Hadrian's Wall right up to the present day. So this is the new children's version of the bestseller Black and British by award-winning historian and broadcaster. It also has, if I've flicked through the book, it has loads of like illustrations, maps, photos, because it's more for children really cool. to like get interested.
Because this is history that we don't know, that we weren't taught in schools.
I was so impressed with so much of this. I was like, I wish I'd been taught this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's so good. This is a book that I want to get for my son, I think, when he's a little bit older. I was considering getting one and donating it to his school, so I'll probably do that as well. But yeah, and I don't know if they still do it. Every copy of this book, 50 pence gets donated to funding black curriculum in schools. So yeah, but I as I said, I listened to it as an audio. It was narrated by the author and it was very good.
I mean, we don't really even get taught sort of the British Empire, our colonial history in that sense. We don't get taught it in schools.
It's probably hard to teach it in a completely positive way.
Yeah.
Although I guess at like primary age children possibly, I don't know, we just learned about Tudors.
Yes, I mean, it was Tudors, we did Romans.
Victorians, Tudors, Romans. And then loads about World War II in secondary school.
What we did do the slave trade in my secondary school, but the way I remember that being taught to us is a very removed thing of this is a thing that happened.
Rather than...
Not than this was done by British government, British people. Yeah. It was very told, it was taught in a removed way of this is a thing in history that happened, not A, how recent history that was, really, or how how it's involved with our Industrial Revolution, all of it like that.
Yeah, like how it's all tied in together.
I didn't know it was the British that did it, the way it was taught to us.
You probably assumed it was like Americans or something, just like...
Well, yeah, they sort of talk about the transatlantic and exactly, the crossing to America. So, yeah, I don't... So I was one of the... It's not many people even get taught this in school.
No.
So it was rare that I got taught this.
I didn't get taught that, no.
Because I think it was one of the elective ones that your teacher had to choose.
Okay.
Because at one point, the school curriculum was like, there was core ones they had to do.
Yeah.
And there was elective ones your teacher could select.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think this came under it.
I had a Polish history teacher and we just did so much in-depth stuff on World War II.
Oh, I mean, World War II was the majority.
Which I really enjoyed learning about anyway, so... I mean, but yeah, it would have been nice to learn other things in history.
It was just a huge part...
I mean, it's a small part of history.
Well, I mean, I just think that's a huge part of your legacy as a British person, and then you have to go somewhere else where you're completely ignorant of what legacy your nationality claims. carries. Yeah. And have to look people in the face where they say, and then the British did this, and you're just there like, oh, no.
Oh, so for those who don't know, I lived in Malta for like a year, and me and my partner, also English, well, yeah, he is English, yeah, but of Polish descent. We went to do like some of the history tours in Malta, and yeah, I was just like, oh, well, we were bastards, weren't we?
Oh, we did some bad things, yeah.
And now we're over here, like, working over here, just like, la, 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 la.
And Malta's still... still in the Empire, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The Empire, quite much. Yeah, but, yeah.
It's very
still a British territory. Leaning.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They're not. They didn't do well from that. From that, I was going to say from that deal, but I wouldn't say it was a deal. Okay, so next on my list is another one I've read, and again I listened to it as audio. It was narrated by the author. Highly recommend. And this is Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Rennie Edo Lodge. So this is a collection of her essays that she's written on her blog leading right up to the release of the book.
Right.
And it's all about it says here, like, it gives you a deeper understanding of the intricate dance between race, class and identity, making it an essential companion for readers who crave a nuanced exploration of the complexities of Black lives and the ongoing struggle for racial justice. You know, it is a collection of essays / blog posts. You know, they have the theme of talking about race, etc. in Britain, but they're not...
cohesive.
Yeah. Which I think some people could struggle with. Basically, I know someone who tried to read this, gave up after a couple of chapters and was like, it doesn't make sense and it's just all about being angry at white people. And I'm like, I think you've gone into that already negatively from the title. Maybe
that's one that's more accessible as an audio.
Yeah. I just think, like, yeah. But I also can imagine a lot of people being like, it's just an angry black woman talking to me. Which is not my opinion. No. But yeah, I just think... if you are not ready to do the work to understand what privilege you have or what your history, the history of your empire, etc., has done, you're not going to get anything out of it. So just, I think, if you're not in the right headspace and not willing to learn, why even try and then badmouth it? And like,
I had someone, we're not friends with this person anymore, not because of this, because of several reasons, but this person said to me, when I said about, when I went travelling and I was kind of over and over being like, our legacy and all the places I visited, and it's just this moment of like when they say, and then the British did it, and all the heads in the crowd flick back to you because I was the only Brit on the trip.
Yeah.
I'm like,
Yeah, it's all good. Sorry, guys.
And when I was talking about that, and he was like, that's just some like white guilt. And I'm like, yeah, because we're guilty.
Yeah, you just described it. Well done.
Yeah, we did do that. And he was like, well, he's like, and then he was like, oh, well, you're Italian by heritage, so your people didn't do that. And I'm like, probably they did. Most of Europe was involved in some kind of colonialism of a kind. The Spanish did it, the French did it. Like, there was a lot of it going about.
Yeah, yeah.
We just did a lot more and a lot more atrocious things.
Successful,
and like when I was
successful in quotes,
successful, yeah. When I had trying to learn about this and educate in the right way to speak and unpack again the privilege, because people are like, well, I'm poor, it's more about class in the UK than race, and I'm like, these things are intertwined, though. It's not that black and white, literally
intertwined. Yeah,
you know, with classism in the UK is a massive issue, and it has more of a bearing than maybe it does in the US. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know US politics enough to be able to talk confidently in that way. I just think
sounds like such a mess.
Class is a big thing in the UK. Class is a huge thing in the UK. Like, I've had people who have travelled to the UK have told me this, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm not basing this on my own, like, thoughts. It's people being like, it's such like a thing, like if you accuse someone of being rich when they're not, it's like such a thing.
I think a lot of like the class stuff in the UK is because we are like, especially if we are comparing it to like America, They are, as a country, relatively new still. I mean, not new, but, you know, compared to the UK. So when we talk about old money in the UK, it's very different to how you talk about old money in America.
Yeah, these people have got wealth lineages going back to, like, 500, 600, 700 years. Like.
And in America, you still very much have the belief that you can be, like, a self-made man.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true. I think that's a capitalist lie. But in the UK, crossing it's not class really, barriers
is really hard.
It's not even a dream here of, like, self-made in the UK.
No one really believes they can do that.
No. Yeah, it's definitely
not a goal someone's working their way towards, because, like, you will meet, I've met people who, like, they had nannies and they went skiing for the season and they said these things to me, and then when I said they were rich, because they were richer than me, they were like, no, we're middle class. And I was like, you are upper middle. They were like, well, you're also middle. And I'm like, fair enough, I can, you know, I'm lower middle,
very
probably
different places though.
You know, I came from working class parents who got a mortgage and got certain privilege that kind of pushed us into that middle class bracket.
Think, like, my goalpost has always been, did you have to work when you're at university? My goalpost.
You go skiing for the season.
Yeah, when you say the season.
You know, or I say to you, did you have a butler? And then you look me dead in the eyes and go, no, but we had a cleaner.
Yeah.
I mean, even having a cleaner, which isn't that expensive, I can still see as a privilege.
I am a cleaner. Yeah. It's a privilege. And some people really treat you like shit as well.
Yeah. So I think crossing class barriers in the UK is just nearly impossible.
Yeah, I just don't think it's anything that someone aspires to.
Even though there are universities, like, the loans don't, unlike in the US, our uni loans don't count against us credit-wise, so they're not going to affect our ability to get mortgages and whatever. So I guess you could build through education, but uni's still incredibly expensive, even with the loans.
Yeah, and I don't know what the job market's like now, but when I left university, especially in the career that I had studied in, it was very much you had to work for free.
Yes.
In the companies, and that was not something I could afford to do, because I didn't have a family to support me, which automatically meant that I could basically not work in the field that I have my degree in.
I don't know, like, I did do an English and creative writing degree, so people were like, that's a wishy-washy degree. But I also live in a house with someone who has a STEM field degree and a master's, and struggled for a really long time to get a break-in job to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even, like, industry-specific at the moment.
No.
Anyway, sorry, it was a bit of a tangent. But
it also doesn't help that we've had 14 years of a government that wants the divide to get larger.
Yeah, it's like, because the person I'm dating moved to the UK, but has only ever known a Tory UK since the recession, so since things have gotten, like, progressively worse.
All of these once-in-lifetime things that keep happening over and over and over.
But, like, that's all he's known, and I'm like, whenever he offers opinions about, say, the NHS, I'm like,
you don't know what it was before it got destroyed.
Like, you've only ever known this shit version. You know, you only ever known the shit version of how we treat our immigrants now. Like, I mean, not to say we've ever been stellar either way.
No.
But they are making it harder and harder and harder. And he came in during that time of change. Yeah. So I'm like, it wasn't always like this. I promise you, well, the UK wasn't always like this.
Yeah. And I think it's a problem in a lot of countries. They're all going backwards. It is backwards. If you're taking away human rights that someone has, it's backwards. There's no way you can phrase it any other way.
Or if we're talking, we're meant to be one of the world powers, but the number of people using food banks is,
we have more food banks than McDonald's in the UK.
Because I met, when I was in Vietnam, someone there did not believe that we had homeless people. He's like, you don't, you're such a rich country. I was like, no. I promise you we do.
They hide them away.
Yeah, they find them and put them in prison for being homeless. But yeah, he genuinely didn't believe me. He's like, no, a country as rich as yours can't have homeless. And I was like, more than I've seen in the city we're in right now. Like, more than that. Interesting.
So there's a YA book series. I've only read the first of it. I do want to read the rest. And it also had a TV show, Noughts and Crosses by Mallory Blackman.
Yes, I have. I know of this. I've not read it.
Ah. So this follows a like an alternate version of the UK. So Callum is a Nought, a second-class citizen in a society run by the ruling Crosses. Sephi is a cross and a daughter of a man slated to become prime minister. In their world, white noughts and black crosses simply don't mix, and they certainly don't fall in love. But that's exactly what they've done. When they were younger, they played together. Now Callum and Sephi meet in secret and make excuses. But excuses no longer cut it when Sephi and her mother are nearly caught in a terrorist bombing planned by the Liberation Militia, with which Callum's family is linked. Callum's father is the prime suspect, and Sephi's father will stop at nothing to see him hanged. The blood hunt that ensues will threaten not only Callum and Sephi's love for each other, but their very lives. Yeah, it is. It was a hard book. I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine that this one's a bit intense.
This was a book I listened to before I properly got back into reading, and I would say it's only since I got back into reading that I've really been able to kind of question and take apart some of my understanding of the world and stuff. And this was quite a hard book. I can understand why some people were like, oh, they're just saying that like all the white people are evil or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, it's because you've gone into it not wanting to learn again.
Yeah,
like you've not taken out of it what you were, what well, is there.
It's the same as all the men that cry, you know, men are oppressed now.
Oh, those men can fuck off.
You know, men can't do anything right anymore, and it's like hatred of men has become commonplace in media, and it's become acceptable to openly trash men, and you would get cancelled if you did that about a woman. It's the same. It's the same narrative.
Yeah. Of not wanting to accept your place in an issue and just trying to reflect it everywhere.
Why, as someone who's been called a man-hating feminist, when I've just been like, I want to be paid the same as you.
Yeah. Well, how dare you hate men?
Or like, I want to walk down the street and know I'm safe.
Yeah. I remember like when someone said to me, oh, I could never be a feminist. I like it when men open doors for me. And I was like, no. The fuck are you even talking about?
That's not what
about?
We're arguing about, babe.
I don't give a shit about doors. I just want to, like, or get paid well and not get raped. Like, what is your problem?
Or is the man who will look you dead in the face and be like, oh, if you want equal rights for women, I should be able to punch you then.
Yeah. And I'm like, why? No one should punch anyone.
Why is that the right?
Why is it always violence?
Why is that the first thing you think of?
You shouldn't be allowed to vote because you can't get drafted. Why is it always about violence with you? Or no one should get drafted.
I was like, what if I don't believe in the wars? And they were like, well, that's just a naive view of the world. And I'm like,
is it though? Because all the men seem to be wanting to do wars, and all the women seem to not want to be.
All the countries that are ruled by women statistically have done a lot better. Statistically,
it's because women are so emotional because we have branded anger as not an emotion, right?
But that's how to give. Maybe people, like, the equivalents, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's a really good way of understanding that, really that same attitude is the men who turn around and be like, well, I should be able to punch you then, or all women just hate men now.
Yeah, they don't like it when I grab them without their permission. They hate men.
Well, like, there's a guy in our periphery, someone I socialise with that's a friend of a friend, who likes to debate these things with me, but the problem is I'll argue him into a corner. And one of the things he said is, oh, we're removing men's purpose. And I was like, what if your purpose is just that I want to love you? I was like, I don't need you to provide for me. You are not necessary to my survival. I want you there. I was like, how can that not be better?
How can that be a negative?
How can you not want that? I was like, I want you. I don't need you. I want you.
That's so different.
I was like, oh, you're not necessary to my survival anymore. I want you there. I want to love you. I was like, how can you not say that's better?
Me only being with you because I'm not allowed to work.
Because I can't get a bank account or this and that. And he'll bring up stats from World War II. And I'm like, you're talking about a time when a woman can have a bank account, can own land.
Yeah.
This is not a... So men back then saying, oh, they feel like they lost purpose because they couldn't work after the war.
But when you look at all of this as well, all of it comes back to a government that wants you to act a certain way. It's nothing to do with women. If you are upset that women working means you don't have a purpose, maybe you should question why you've been conditioned to believe your only purpose is to work.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, okay. What? Oh, yeah. So that's how I'm the equivalence. Not that I need an equivalence to understand this topic.
No, but in case anyone does.
Yeah.
Next on my list, I haven't read. It's called Brit-ish, and like the ish is in
quote marks. Yeah. No, brackets.
Thank you. Yeah. On race, identity, and belonging. So this is by Ufa Hirsch. You're British, your parents are British, you were raised in Britain, your partner, your children, and most of your friends are British. So why do people keep asking you where you came from? British is about a search for identity. It is about the everyday racism that plagues British society, and it is about our awkward, troubled relationship with our history. It's about why liberal attempts to be colourblind have caused more problems than they have solved. It's about why we continue to avoid talking about race.
I mean, that's literally everything you've just been ranting about, isn't
exactly.
it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so true. Like you mentioned about how it's not derogatory to refer to someone as black here. It's always the context. Like, if I'm relaying a story involving a person,
And their race isn't relevant to the story.
I don't need to mention their race if it's not relevant, yeah. But then there are people that be like, oh, I met a nurse today, she was black, but she was nice. And I'm like, I don't...
That wasn't necessary to the story.
At no point did I think she wasn't nice.
Or even like...
Or did I care what colour her skin was?
Oh, the Polish shopkeeper. Did you need...
Yeah.
Was that relevant? Did we need to mention that? No, we didn't.
But then we've gone so far the other way where it's like, as this mentions, the colourblind where thing. Some people think they... It's always extreme erasure. People of like, oh, I can't even mention their colour now. And it's like...
No. Just don't use it in a derogatory term.
Use your brain for once, please.
That's an innocent example of this. Of like, you know, people being asked, where are you really from?
Yeah.
Okay, so that obviously is a question we don't get.
No, some people ask where my surname's from, and I'm like, literally England. It's like the English name you can get, don't worry.
Yeah, so that's when I moved to Birmingham, which is a bit more multicultural than the place we're from. It's the first time someone ever asked me because of my surname, because I've got quite an Italian-sounding name. And then also I'm not shaped like a typical British woman. I don't know. What does that even mean?
I would say you possibly are.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the first I remember. That's the first. That was, she asked because I went on a holiday and she's like, you've come back a different colour. She's like, what are you?
Tell me what are you?
She's like, what's your heritage? She was like, because you tan really well and you've got like, your surname and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, I just want to know your heritage. And then I was like, oh, I've never been asked that before. And she's like, really? Do you know how many times I get asked that? Like a week?
Yeah.
Because she was mixed.
And
it's like, oh, have I gone through like 20 years of my life and no one's ever asked me that? But there are people, they get asked that all the time.
When I was like late teens, early 20s, when we had a lot of Polish migrants move into like our local area. When I used to go for job interviews, people used to ask me if I was Polish. By my name.
Oh.
And I was like, no, actually. Do you want to hire me? I can say I am if you'll hire me. Like, I don't care. All right. Queenie by Candice Carty Williams. So this is a contemporary fiction.
Are you showing me the cover?
Oh, yeah. Please. You will have definitely seen
it. Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
So this is Bridget Jones's Diary meets Americana in this disarmingly honest, boldly political and truly inclusive novel that will speak to anyone who has gone looking for love and found something very different in its place. Queenie Jenkins is a 25-year-old Jamaican-British woman living in London, straddling two cultures and slotting neatly into neither. I can't imagine how hard that would be. People who are born to parents who are of different nationalities or whatever. I can't imagine how hard it might be to try and find your place.
Yeah.
If you are, like, a bit of everything. Like, yeah.
I went... When I worked at one of the jobs I worked at, a guy there was mixed, and he was like, I don't know what box to tick on the forms. He's like, he doesn't know what box to tick because there's not, like...
a box for him.
I think they add mixes on there now. Yeah. Mixed heritage is on there now, but back then it wasn't.
No.
And he's like, I don't know which one to tick.
And I know I've seen, from what I've gathered online, I know there's like a big issue. And I always see this argument of like people saying that if you are mixed, you can't call yourself black. And it's like, well, no, mixed women are still black women.
Or because that's what his issue was. He's mixed heritage, but raised by his white mum in a white family in what he would say was white culture.
Yeah.
And he was like, so I'm technically this, but I'm also this. And I'm like, he's like, I'm not, you know.
What do I do? Yeah. So she works at a national newspaper where she's consistently forced to compare herself to her white middle-class peers. After a messy breakup from her long-term white boyfriend, Queenie seeks comfort in all the wrong places, including several hazardous men who do a good job at occupying brain space and a bad job of affirming self-worth. As Queenie careens from one questionable decision to another, she finds herself wondering, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who do you want to be? All of the questions today's woman must face in a world trying to answer them for her. This sounds so good. It's been, like, on my peripheral for a while. Maybe I should read it.
Yeah, I think I have quite a few things to add to my list yeah, that's, today. Yeah,
that's just reignited. I should probably read that one. Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. There's another one. I have this on my bookshelf, actually. I just...
Bernardine is how most people think my name should be pronounced.
Bernardine, yeah.
Bernardine. Miss Bernardine.
Bernardine Evaristo is the winner of the 2019 Booker Prize and the first black woman to receive this highest literary honour in the English language. In 2019? That's Jesus. Crazy. Girl, Woman, Other is a magnificent portrayal of the intersections of identity and a moving and hopeful story of an interconnected group of black British women that paints a vivid portrait of the state of contemporary Britain and looks back to the legacy of Britain's colonial history in Africa and the Caribbean. The 12 central characters in this multi-voice novel lead vastly different lives. It tells you about their lives. Sparkingly witty and filled with emotion, centering voices we often see othered and written in an innovative, fast-moving form that borrows technique from poetry. It's a polyphonic and richly textured social novel. Yeah, I've got that on my bookshelf, so I need to hurry up and pick it up. And finally...
Well, this is such a good list you've done.
Yeah, but I did realise, and I must admit, I struggled. Okay, I was aware of this, but I just struggled to find books that were centred around black joy. I'm sorry, I tried to add more to the list, but I just really struggled to find them. So please give me recommendations. And if there's any publishers listening, please bloody print them.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't always have to be doom and gloom. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I want more joyful books as well that tell me about the black experience.
You can explore that history and that legacy in different ways. I'm not saying one is more right than the other, but there are other ways to explore it.
Yeah.
Other like, than...
the trauma doesn't always have to be the centre point of a story.
And also putting them in the little... the victim box,
yeah.
Always.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's... it's this, you know...
they serve a purpose, those books, but I also want the happy side.
And
I
people want, are like, so much more than that as well. It's shoving them in that victim corner.
Yeah.
When it's like... we are more than that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So please give me recommendations for any just books that are just brimming with black joy, please. And the last one on my list is, I think actually, well, this is a romance and I think it is more of a joyful one. Okay. I mean, as it's a romance, by definition, it has to have a happily ever after, no matter what that Fred Zulfa said. Honey and Spice by Bulu Babalola. So this was a TikTok...
yeah, show me the cover.
Book of the Month.
Yes, I've seen this.
TikTok did a short run, sadly, book group. They only did about 4 months worth, and this was one of the books on that. So this is a dazzling debut novel full of passion, humour and heart that centres on a young black British woman who has no interest in love and unexpectedly finds herself caught up in a fake relationship with the man she warns her girls about. sharp-tongued and secretly soft-hearted Kiki Banjo has just made a huge mistake as an expert in relationship evasion and the host of a popular student radio show, Brown Sugar. She's made it her mission to make sure the women of the African Caribbean Society at Whitehall University do not fall into the mess of situationships, players and heartbreak. But when the queen of the unbothered kisses, Malachi Karodi, the guy she just publicly denounced as the waste man of Whitewell in front of every Blackwellian on the campus, she finds her show on the brink. They're soon embroiled in a fake relationship to try and salvage their reputations and save their futures. Kiki has never surrendered her heart before, and a player like Malachi won't be the one to change that, no matter how charming he is or how electric their connection feels. Ooh. So this is a joyful one.
Mm.
A nice one to end this list on, I think. So that was a mixture of books I've read, books I haven't read. They're all authors that you should add to your list and check them out, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good list. They all sound really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously mixture. They sparked a couple interesting discussions in the room.
Sorry about that, guys.
But yeah, please come and join us on any of our socials, in our Facebook group, on our TikTok, on our Instagram. Join our Ko-fi, and then you can join from there. You can get a link to our Discord. Come there, give me some more recommendations, please.
Oh yeah, we'd love to, because like we're just searching for stuff on the internet, which is always kind of a bit biased.
Yeah, and like TikTok is very good for getting recommendations, but you always get those people to recommend things a bit dodgily and maybe don't actually. So you go into it thinking it's one thing and it's not that at all.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, it's this trope and this trope. And then you read it and it's like, this book is a lot more than,
Yeah. So, yeah, this is like, a list of authors that I've heard of or books that I've had on my radar. But I'm sure there's thousands more that I need to know about, so come share them with us, please. And whilst you're clicking all the links and doing all the good stuff, please make sure to follow, subscribe, rate, rank, whatever you can do for our podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Please do that. It would really help us reach more people, and yeah, we just want to build a bigger community, so we'd love to have you download our episode, basically.
Are you there? Please tell us.
Download and like so that we know you're there, please. And we will see you next week for something a little bit different. I think indie authors next week.
Oh, I can't remember. I've lost all.
Indie offers even next week or the week after.
We plan quite far in advance, but can we remember it?
No. Okay, speak to you later. Bye, guys. Bye.